This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 20th of October 2023. Hello and welcome to the Winchester Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle dated the 19th of October 2023. Your readers today are Tony Bergstrom.
Hello.
John Richards.
Hello.
And Jane Rutter.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, John Parker. The main headlines this week are: patrols face axe due to funding cuts, calls to improve estate road services, and bus service on its way for new housing estate. So we start with the story behind the first headline.
Patrols face axe during funding cuts. Fears as council threatens lollipop crossings. Parents and councillors across the district fear what would happen if they lost their school crossing patrols following the county council's proposed cuts. School crossing patrols across Hampshire could be axed as part of a budget proposal which aims to save £1.1 million. However, parents are concerned that removing school crossings could result in an accident. Emma McKenzie, clerk for Bishop's Waltham Parish Council, is grateful for the town's school crossing patrol lady, Diane Polterbird, who's been helping kids to get to school safely for 21 years. Miss McKenzie, whose son goes to Bishop's Waltham Junior School, said, "The lollipop lady is very important and so friendly and helpful. She looks after all the children. The road is so fast and on a junction. Getting rid of a school crossing patrols would mean more parents would drive their kids to school, creating more traffic." Samantha Newton, whose child attends preschool in Bishop's Waltham, said it's very important to have school crossing patrols. These roads around here are not safe at all. County Councillor and Winchester City Council leader Martin Todd has challenged the County Council over a potential solution which he believes wouldn't work in less well-off areas. Councillor Todd said, "The funding problems aren't happening by chance. They're a direct consequence of decisions made by Conservative ministers, MPs and councillors. I'm really worried that children's safety will be put at risk. The County Council is proposing an alternative way of funding crossing patrols, but it won't work in less well-off areas." Jackie Jones, who's been a school crossing patrol officer for Stanmore Primary School for 7 years, said, "I'd be very upset. This is an awkward road here, and they need someone to cross them over." Kimberly Carter said she would be very against the cuts to cut crossing patrol officers, saying, "This is a main road, and we need one." City Councillor for Stanmore, Charlie Wise, said, "I really worry. Losing the crossing patrols here would make children's walk to school much less safe, and I urge the County Council to reconsider." A spokesman for Hampshire County Council said, "Regarding the specific proposal to find 1.1 million savings from the school crossing patrol budget, any future changes to this service would require more detailed assessment and further public consultation. While we have a legal duty to ensure children can get to school as safely as possible, we do not have a statutory duty to do this through the dedicated provision of school crossing patrol officers."
Calls to improve estate road service. People living in the new King's Barton development are pressing for improvements to the surface on their roads. A meeting heard that residents are unhappy about the poor quality surface on the quarter-built housing estate on the edge of Winchester. Around 500 of the 2,000 homes have been built. Mike Slynn, chairman of the local residents association, spoke at the King's Barton Forum, which involves local councillors, residents and the developer, Carla Holmes. Mr. Slynn said, "The state of the roads is poor in Phase 1B. We have heard from Carla that the wearing course, that's the top surface for the estate roads, is going to be provided, but the main road, Winchester Avenue, doesn't have one." Ian Curry, Carla Technical Director, said he was waiting for the final technical approval from the County Council for the design of Winchester Avenue. Forum Chairman Councillor Steve Cramoisan asked whether the lack of a final top surface for Winchester Avenue was because it would be damaged by heavy machinery working on other areas near the road. Mr. Curry said diggers would not be used on metalled roads. The final top surface would be laid, quote, "at the last moment. Nobody will want a road surface with lots of scars across it due to remedial work on lampposts or curbs," unquote. He said the roads are not left unsafe. "In Phase 1B," he said, "we were aware of potholes forming and sorted them out. It's not pretty, but there is no point putting a wearing course in Winchester Avenue because we have not got technical approval from the County Council." Mr. Curry said the alignment of Winchester Avenue would not change when the Andover Road is diverted, but there would be some changes. "The County Council is unhappy with the granite sets in the middle of the carriageway, and they will be removed. A campaign is still running to stop the diversion of Andover Road. The Residents Association has recently written to the government seeking them to alter the planning permission granted around 15 years ago. When 600 homes have been built, the Andover Road will be diverted through the estate. At the current rate of construction, the estate will be finished in around 2035.
And our last headline story is another one from the King's Barton estate. Bus service on its way for new housing estate. The partially built King's Barton estate is finally poised to get a bus service in the new year. The estate should have had buses by the completion of the 350th home, but they are still awaited, even though there are now 500 homes on the 2,000 home development. The King's Barton Forum heard the latest from Hampshire County Council officer Mike Griffin Thorne, who has conducted a survey which revealed demand. Mr. Griffin Thorne said the County Council was proposing a Monday to Saturday service to run between 6:30 a.m. and 8:30 p.m., serving the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, railway station and city centre. There would be four pick-up points along Winchester Avenue, the main road through the estate. At first, a minibus would be used, as Winchester Avenue is not currently a through route, and it will be easier for a smaller vehicle to negotiate the roads. Should there be demand, the size of the bus could be increased, said Mr. Griffin Thorne. "We need to be aware there may have to be compromises. We have a vision and know what we would like to see, but we have to be realistic," he said. The service is scheduled to start in January. For the first year, it will be run by the council, but another option is to then put it out to commercial tender. The forum heard that bus subsidies are among the many things that the County Council is currently cutting. The bus service has a subsidy from Carla Holmes to last 12 months, but when that runs out, the service will have to be economically viable. The forum heard that many nurses who work at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital live on the King's Barton estate and would use the service. Councillor Jackie Porter said there will be a need to watch the impact of the new route on Stagecoach's 86 service. Councillor James Batho asked if the service could be extended to run to the leisure centre at Bar End, as people in North Winchester are poorly served if they want to use it.
That concludes the headline stories, and we continue with the death announcements. Brewer, George Ivor Brewer, known as Buster, at Flowerdown Care Home, Winchester, on the 26th of September, aged 91. Chase, Eric Charles Harry Chase, at home on the 30th of September, aged 98. Collard, Margaret Rose Collard, at home on the 2nd of October, aged 77. Cottle, Patricia Cottle. There are no dates given, just the date of the funeral. Cross, Mary Claire Cross, née Samuel, known as Sammy, at home on the 3rd of September, aged 84. Hill, Kathleen Hill, at home on the 2nd of October, aged 92. Kiddle, Roger Kiddle, on the 23rd of September at Winchester Hospice. Leslie, James Colvin Ramsey Leslie, known as Colvin, at Mountbatten, Hampshire, on the 26th of September, aged 79. Looney, Elizabeth Looney, known as Betty, at St Catherine's View on the 6th of October. Minshull, John Francis Minshull, at Mary Louise House on the 14th of September, aged 89. Ponsonby, Anne Veronica Ponsonby, on the 3rd of October, aged 98. Rayner, Brian Rayner, on the 4th of October. Scott, Monica Patricia Scott, née Smith, on the 12th of October at Frimley Park Hospital. Tracy Burner, Sharon Tracy Burner, on the 23rd of September. Turner, Peter George Turner, on the 25th of September at Maypole Care Lodge Home in Hedge End, aged 93. Westrip, Joyce Enid Westrip, known as Joy, at Tegfield House Care Home Winchester on the 7th of October, aged 96. Watley, Paul Watley, on the 14th of October in Dubai, aged 69. And there is a double one here who I presume are husband and wife. Wicks, Geoffrey Wicks, known as Jeff, on the 4th of September, aged 89. And Wicks, Sheila Margaret Wicks, on the 23rd of September, aged 88. Next, we have Christian Comment.
And this is by Rosemary A. Baker, and it's headed, Accepting Everyone as Gifts. I was astonished to recently read an article that was titled, Dyslexia is a God-given gift and not a learning disability. This came as a shock to me, being someone who not only was considered mildly dyslexic, but also to have a major problem with dyscalculia, the same sort of difficulties, but with numbers and calculations. I had certainly never even remotely considered this to be helpful, and indeed had always seen it as a great disadvantage, a huge obstacle to be overcome. My poor father went to such lengths, first of all to try and understand why I had such specific difficulties, perhaps going to so many schools, as he was in the army. My mother thought it might be because of concussion when I fell down the stairs. Whatever the cause, he set out to try and help. It was my ambition to be a doctor, so I could be a missionary. But having just managed O-level maths, physics and chemistry, it was going to be a mammoth task to get A-level physics and chemistry. There was a small glimmer of light. I could somehow always manage to work out how much a bar of chocolate cost. I remember the astonishment of my chemistry teacher as I substituted chocolate into equations to get them to come out correctly. Still, it worked, and off I went to study medicine with the required qualifications. So, I qualified, ended up being a consultant psychiatrist, specializing in people with neurodevelopmental disability, learning disability. I kept a piece of card with words I couldn't spell in my wallet, and thankfully mobile phones have saved me from using directory inquiries. The person who wrote the article praises the lateral thinking, fast thinking, and problem-solving ability that often accompany dyslexia. Interestingly, I also came across the story of Henry Fraser, a paraplegic mouth artist who has written a book called Little Big Things about his life, which has now been made into a musical. At the age of 17, he crushed his spinal cord in an accident. He used to be good at art as a child and rediscovered his creativity and learnt to paint with his mouth. He has adopted the motto, accept and adapt, in order to move on with his life. He also believes adversity can be a gift. Christians and Jews believe that we are all made in the image of God and we are all loved equally by him. The Christian church has not always accepted people with different abilities, but perhaps we should all accept each other as gifts, whatever our gifts actually are. And that was by Rosemary A. Baker.
Next, we have the letters to the editor of the Hampshire Chronicle. If you yourself would like to send a letter to the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by either telephoning 01962 860836, that's 01962 860836, emailing letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, that's letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or writing to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO238AL. That's 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO238AL. We got quite a crop of letters this week, 14 in total. Maybe the bad weather is keeping everybody inside and they're just spending their time writing letters to the editor. Anyway, we'll start off with the first letter,
which is entitled Parking Folly, and it's from Ted Hart. It was good to see that there is a sensible city councillor in Winchester, Neil Bolton, who understands the folly of the new overnight and weekend parking charges, Chronicle October the 12th. As the Winchester Business Improvement District statement indicated, the recent tinkering with the charges is only paying lip service to the problems it has created. I spoke to some of the farmers' market stallholders last week, and they had noticed a drop in footfall and sales since the new Sunday parking increase. Also, the market has become significantly smaller. However, yet again, Councillor Learney fails to comprehend basic civics in that the City Council is there to represent the businesses and residents of the city and not their own personal views. But she did say she is, quote, open to having positive and meaningful discussions with our local community, unquote. So, may I suggest she sets a date, books a large room and allows everyone who arrives to enter. And if the meeting overruns, think how much money the city will make on the parking fees. That's from Ted Hart, Maytree Close, Badger Farm, Winchester.
This letter is from David Hoggett and it's entitled Harsh on SUVs. Jeremy Pierce, Chronicle Letters, October the 5th, is a tad harsh on SUV owners, suggesting their vehicles are mere status symbols and bad for the environment. My Land Rover is far from this. I live on a hill and need to reach my mother, who is in her 90s and lives alone 20 miles away. whatever the unreliable weather throws at us each winter. Equally important, Landys are made in Britain, like all my vehicles since I passed my tests 43 years ago, which is crucial for employment in the Midlands and minimising the carbon footprint of delivery from factory to consumer. Land Rovers have a hugely impressive history of being kept on the road for decades after contemporary foreign cars have been landfilled. Remember, it is the production of a vehicle and their possible shipping over 12,000 miles that racks up a large amount of its carbon footprint. To keep them on the road drastically reduces future manufacturing or shipment emissions. There is an associated issue here. The fallacy that because a car is electric, it is virtuous. Not when it is made in an oppressive state like China. Think here of the MGs and Teslas flooding our market, which is the world's number one polluter, partly because their industrial processes trash the environment to save costs. Possibly worse, dubious Chinese supply chain activity includes flouting internationally agreed labour standards. And that letter was from David Hoggett, Northbrook Avenue, St Giles Hill in Winchester.
And this letter is from Stephen Percy and headed Pound Foolish with a question mark. The summer of 2023 was the Earth's hottest ever recorded, leading to the UN Secretary General to say that our climate is now imploding at a faster rate than we can cope with. Against this background, our own government has announced a watering down of our commitment to reducing carbon emissions, arguing that it will save money. However, far from saving money, it is almost certain to cost us more in the long run. One example is that the government scrapped regulations in 2015, which would have required the 1.5 million houses built since then to be fitted with solar panels, batteries, air source heat pumps, and effective insulation, costing perhaps around £8,500 per house. The result of this folly is that in addition to the foregoing, the reduction in emissions and customers' bills, the cost of retrofitting will be around 3 or 4 times the cost of installation during construction. A case of penny wise, pound foolish, perhaps? And that's from Stephen Percy, Easton, Winchester.
Ian Case writes a letter entitled School Execution. On Monday, October the 9th, a HIT team from the Hampshire Local Education Authority visited Ampfield School and delivered an ill-prepared presentation about the process they were going to follow to close down Ampfield Church of England Primary School. This team had given minimal notice, so the audience was small. The statistics they presented were derisory and would not have met the standards laid down by any self-respecting statistician or the Market Research Society's exacting requirements. They failed to show that they had examined alternatives, and every optimistic, constructive suggestion from the audience was dismissed with body language and answers that indicated they had come with a preordained brief to close the school. They explained a very short process for consultation and said that the matter would be decided by one individual in the LEA and that that individual would not be available for face-to-face questioning by parents, staff, governors or other interested parties. Parents and staff explained the unique offers that this small school gives to children from as far away as Millbrook and the value of small classes. Yet the LEA HIT team was only interested in the catchment area of a few square miles between Hursley, Brashfield and Ampfield. In today's world, the smaller classes offered by private schools is valued, yet this team want to force the sensitive pupils of Ampfield with special needs into unsuitable larger classes. The team said that one of the problems in schools was the lack of teachers. In their team, there were two former teachers. Rather than trying to shut down Hampshire's uneconomic schools, they should be seconded to Ampfield for 12 months and help turn it around. In a lifetime of business, this was one of the most egregious, incompetent presentations I've attended. It was an exercise in steamrollering. The LAA, in their arrogance, is judge, jury, and executioner. Their attitude was disgraceful and so disrespectful to all who work so hard at Ampfield School. And that is from Ian Case, Knapp Lane, Ampfield.
This letter is from our regular correspondent, Judith Martin, and it's entitled Wrong Road. Hampshire County Council plans minimum services according to the article on page 48, Chronicle, October the 12th. Yet its leader says its finances are in a good position, page 3. They must be, as Hampshire County Council is planning to spend the best part of £500,000 on a trial traffic scheme centred on Clifton Terrace in Winchester. This cropped up during the pandemic with an online public meeting, by which time the road engineers and councillors seemed to have decided what they wanted to do. What they didn't say was what it would cost. After it went quiet for so long, I and no doubt many other people were hoping it had gone away, but now it seems it's back. There it is on HCC's own website. Approval date September the 11th. A total estimated cost of £448,233 with an additional £15,000 of site maintenance to be funded from developer contributions. If it overruns, as we know projects tend to, the cost will go up. HCC is paring back everything from school transport for disabled children to cultural provision. It's hard to see how they could spend less on road maintenance, as suggested in the minimum services article. The scheme is for a crossing on Romsey Road between Clifton Terrace and St James's Terrace. I asked officers and members for the background evidence to their initial decision-making, but got no response. I must declare some interest, as I live very close by, but there are hundreds of people in at least three city wards whose lives will not be improved by this. My complaint is not that a crossing wouldn't be good to have, but that this scheme is grossly over-engineered, and in its desire to stop rat running, Stockbridge Road is apparently a rat run, will actually create far more problems on much smaller roads. By making journey times from the west longer via Cheriton Road, it will also increase fuel use. If it's found to be a failure, which it might well be, with no left turn into Romsey Road, then it will presumably be unpicked at more cost. There must be a simpler and cheaper way. And that letter's from Judith Martin, Romsey Road in Winchester.
And this is a letter from G.N. Barrett, entitled Water Waste. The 140 million to be paid to water company customers, that money would be better spent on building a desalination plant or plants to ensure future supplies and not dictate as to what we can use and what we can't. Do stop wasting money on reservoirs. Build treatment works to cope with heavy rainfall and stop polluting rivers and streams. But they will not, because their excuse to pollute streams, etc., will be removed. Exactly. And that is from G.N. Barrett, Nicholson Place, Oxford.
This letter entitled Having a Say is from Peter Innes. So, something is emerging for Have a Say. Pity that the opportunity for us in the Worthies to have a say appeared in the Chronicle, Thursday, October the 5th, the day after it happened. Will we get a new chance, or will we have to go elsewhere, maybe to be somewhere in the city centre as yet unannounced? Even before going to such a meeting, may we be entitled to news about the earliest steps likely already passed, such as Who are Jigsaw? What past successes can they boast? How were they selected? What are their terms of reference? What will be their eventual involvement and interest in the completed project? What will their stages of work, master planning, consultation, public involvement approvals, etc.? How and when will they be remunerated? The setting up of a scheme website would be a sensible way ahead to involve the public and maybe develop public ownership of the future of Winchester City Centre. But the communications record of the present City Council does not offer us much help. That's from Peter Innes, Nations Hill, Headbourne Worthy, Winchester, and there is a note from the letter's editor. Many of Mr. Innes's questions have been answered in the coverage of the issue by the Chronicle in recent months.
This letter is from Jock MacDonald, and it's entitled Perfect Place. Janet Budd is absolutely right to make her last-minute suggestion to the church commissioners to donate the land of Bushfield Farm to the citizens of Winchester. Chronicle Letters, October the 12th. It is the perfect place for low-cost housing to be built on the site of the actual army camp, so that the wild part below it and to the east is included as a nature emergency for the people round about. There is already quite enough commercial development rightly taking place elsewhere in the city. And that's from Jock MacDonald, Stockbridge Road, Full Flood in Winchester.
And this is a letter from Brian Thompson, headed Memories of a Camp. I was very surprised to learn recently that Bushfield Camp is still derelict. My National Service took me to Winchester Barracks for 12 weeks basic training in the late 1950s. I then served the remaining 21 months working in the officers' mess at Bushfield. There was also some Army Records section working at Bushfield, but quite a long way from where we were. I have several photos showing both the inside and outside of Bushfield. Should you ever do an article on this camp, I'm sure I could arrange for some copies. And this is from Brian Thompson, who lives in Falmouth Gardens, Redbridge, Essex.
This letter is entitled Prison Appeal. It's from Sophie Anscombe, and it's important that I tell you who she is. She's the Regional Prison Support Lead, West Midlands, South West and South Central, the Independent Monitoring Board Secretariat, Ministry of Justice, London. She writes, "We are currently looking for new members to join the Independent Monitoring Board, the IMB, at most prisons across England and Wales. The IMB helps to ensure that proper standards of care and decency are maintained. Applicants do not need any special qualifications or experience, as we will provide all necessary training and support. Candidates need to be over 18 years of age and live within a reasonable distance of the prison. That's really up to 1 hour travel time. You need to be enthusiastic, open-minded, possess effective communication skills, and have the ability to exercise sound, objective judgment. We encourage applications from people from minority ethnic communities, young people, those of working age, and people with disabilities, as these groups are underrepresented on our existing boards. This is an unpaid voluntary role, but we pay your travel expenses and, in certain circumstances, some loss of earnings and childcare or carer costs. The time commitment is approximately 2 to 3 visits per month, although this will be higher in the first year as members go through induction into the role. Closing date for applications is October the 29th, 2023. Please visit the IMB website for further information, and to apply, go to imb.org.uk/prison-volunteer/prison-volunteer-uk. I'll read that again. It's all lowercase. imb.org.uk/prison-volunteer/prison-volunteer/UK. And that's from Sophie Anscombe from the Ministry of Justice in London.
This letter's from Brian Scott and it's entitled Go With Flow. I have no reason to doubt Ms. Farmer's expertise, Chronicle Letters, October the 5th, and I haven't seen the other letter she spoke of. But if the lights at St. George's Street weren't in penguin, but all lights went to pedestrian green together and green filter left at St. George's Street at other times, a better flow would ensue. Likewise, when a green at Southgate lights was accompanied by a red turn right at St. George's, a better flow through would take place. To say it's not so simple means the citizens just have to put up with the scourge of stationary traffic when improvements to the lights could be made. And that's from Brian Scott, Southgate Street in Winchester.
And this is a letter from Adrian Risden, and it's entitled Rebel Cause. I'm grateful to Belgarum, Sylvia Knight and Oliver Miners for campaigning for a better Alice Lyle plaque in the square, Chronicle October the 5th. As your photograph makes clear, the present plaque is too high up on the wall to be easily noticed. But I hope you won't mind my pointing out that the Duke of Monmouth rebelled against King James II, not King James I. It's worth insisting that Lady Lyle knowingly assisted rebels. Some Hampshire writers, for example, John Heath Stubbs in his poem Old Mob, insult her memory by saying she sheltered the two rebels out of mere compassion. This interpretation, implying she would just as happily have offered King James's men shelter, disrespects her highly principled behaviour. And this letter is from Brother Adrian Risden, Hospital of St. Cross, Winchester.
This, I think, is the last letter, and... No, it's not. This is the penultimate letter, I'm sorry, my mistake. It's a lovely letter. It's entitled Tribute to John, and it's written from Aaron Cleaver, who lives in Cumbria. May I add my tribute to John Doherty, former chief reporter of the Hampshire Chronicle, who died in September. I was editor of the Hampshire Chronicle from 1996 to 2004, and John was one of the many dedicated staff who ensured the paper continued in its 250-year-old mission of serving the people of Hampshire through diligent and sensitive reporting. He was chief reporter, and I know many of the younger reporters who came up through the ranks owe much to him, sharing freely his many years of experience in the industry. He also gave a voice to many readers who found themselves at the mercy of overzealous government officials or bullying tradesmen, fighting their corner and ensuring that they had a friend in their battle for justice. He had served his fellow colleagues on the Chronicle by taking on the role of Father of the Chapel for the National Union of Journalists, and that title seemed particularly apt for John. He was in many ways the paper's moral compass, reminding me on occasions to temper over-enthusiasm with an understanding that what we printed would be seen by thousands of people. What a pity the newspaper industry does not have more John Doherty's in its ranks, and what a privilege it was to have him on the Hampshire Chronicle team. Many journalists believe the most important skill is being able to ask the right questions, but John knew instinctively that while it was a necessary skill, the most important skill was to listen. Only by listening carefully to your interviewee can you understand their position and accurately reflect their story. Listening, for John, was fortunately one of his natural talents and enabled him to get to the heart of any story. John worked more hours than he was paid for, but he still found time to be actively involved in many aspects of the Winchester community. His religious beliefs were important to him, and his search for spiritual truths took him all over Europe to meet people from all walks of life. Much of this search was captured in his book, The Life of a Man is Holy, published by the Hampshire Chronicle in 2005. Reporters, ironically, often receive a bad press, but all those who met or worked with John knew that he exemplified the best qualities of a journalist and of a human being: kindness, understanding, patience, and a willingness to listen. He was a true gentleman of the press. That's from Alan Cleaver, Church Street, Whitehaven, Cumbria.
This final letter is from Dr. Harry Mycock, and it's entitled Extensive Reach of View from the Hill. As I walked by, assessing plans for half a dozen working parties organised by the Friends of St. Giles Hill Park in the month of October, I happened across local artist Don Lavelle on day 5 of 15, capturing the view of the city from this iconic viewpoint, so often portrayed by artists and later by photographers, too, over the last 300 years or so. The people of Winchester may be familiar with Don as an artist who has created a catalogue of acrylic and watercolour paintings of Winchester. 4 of his paintings are on display at Green's Bar and Kitchen, if you need a cultural excuse for a meal and a drink. Don's art is captured en plein air, that is, solely on the spot, and from this vantage point he has a monocular to enable him to pick out precise detail. It would be great to own such an artwork, but this commission is off to a client in New Zealand. The view from St. Giles Hill has an extensive reach, it would seem. And that's from Dr. Harry Mycock, Quarry Road, St. Giles Hill in Winchester.
That concludes the letters, and we follow now on with the Hampshire Chronicle editorial comment, which will be followed by letter from Westminster, and first person.
And this is the editorial comment. The need to protect school lollipop patrols. Most of us have been there. A few minutes before school drop-off time, there are lots of cars, lots of people, and everyone is in a rush. Throw into that mix a load of children, some half asleep, some full of energy, with stressed parents trying to juggle siblings, and most of them juggling the stress of a job, which they are probably on their way to. Maybe even running late too. It's a chaotic mix. That's even before you take into consideration other normal people who are equally under pressure to get to work in time, driving past. That's where our school crossing patrols become a vital part of community life. The people who operate them are well known, well liked and respected. A cheery good morning, followed by a thank you, makes the children's passage into school just a little bit less stressful. Drivers know to stop, children know where to cross, and parents have that little bit of extra support. They keep our children safe, and you can't put a price on that. The County Council needs to protect this service.
Now, the letter from Winchester.
No,
I'm sorry, I made the same mistake. Letter from Westminster, which is from Steve Brine, MP. Earlier this week, I was in Birmingham giving a keynote address at the Pharmacy Show. It brings together thousands of people from across the sector for a 2-day event at the NEC. Pharmacists are the people we largely know from high street stores, but they work across hospitals and in general practice too, as part of the wider team. And I was at the show as chair of the Health Select Committee to speak about our major new pharmacy inquiry. To my mind, pharmacists are highly trained clinicians who hold the potential to change aspects of our health service for the better. Harnessed properly, pharmacy can transform the way in which health and care is delivered, focus on prevention, and even help secure the future of the NHS. Our inquiry looks at what the pharmacy of the future could look like and what the government might do to make sure the opportunity isn't lost. We want it to be forward-looking, to consider the full range of pharmacy services, whether they might be and include issues of funding, workforce, including issues around retention, medicine shortages, career pathways, training and supervision, as well as apprenticeships. We will seek to understand what the pharmacy profession might look like if they can be adequately remunerated to move away from the time-consuming dominance of dispensing to become the genuine centres of primary care excellence I know they can be. Earlier this year, the expert panel that advises me evaluated government commitments in pharmacy and overall rated the government's progress in this area as requires improvement. There is clearly then a lot of work to be done if pharmacy services are to reach the potential I have described. But before any of that is possible, we need to secure the future of community pharmacy, because it cannot provide any sort of service if it's no longer there. So funding is absolutely a key component of our inquiry. Building on £645 million of new money announced this year as part of the primary care recovery plan, and for which I had long argued. We can all write leaflets, but that is genuine, tangible impact from our MP on actual government decisions. Secondly, smoking remains the biggest preventable killer in our country today. We've done so much to help people quit, but we need to do more if we're to achieve the smoke-free ambition I set whilst a health minister in Theresa May's government. Last year, the Kahn Review proposed a series of measures aimed at doing just that, and ministers took many of them on board. One idea is for England to follow the New Zealand example of changing the law so that children turning 40 or younger this year can never legally buy cigarettes. I have been pressing Rishi Sunak and his predecessors to look again, and last month the Prime Minister announced that he will create a smoke-free generation in England by doing just that. As I said at the time, it is the very embodiment of a long-term decision and will save tens of thousands of lives. Yes, it is banning things, but I would argue in a publicly funded state healthcare system, the state has a right and indeed a responsibility to act on public health. And if you don't buy that, consider the £21 billion a year smoking-related illness costs the NHS.
Today's first person from George Hayter is entitled Wholemeal, the Real Deal. I got the idea from a BBC TV series, O'Donnell Investigates, back in the 1990s. Health expert Dr. O'Donnell stood in front of a bull and, speaking to the TV camera, advocated eating less meat. He promised viewers longer and healthier lives if they would instead eat more food high in fibre. Roughage-rich vegetable-based whole food, he told me and millions of other viewers, would make possible a longer and healthier life. I wouldn't mind a longer life, I thought to myself as I watched the life-changing programme, and being healthier probably wouldn't do me any harm either, so I followed his recommendation, choosing whole food wherever possible. Whole food is vegetables, fruit, and most of all grain, which has not had the fibrous parts chucked away. After switching to my more fibrous diet, every day at work I carried on having afternoon tea with scone and butter. In the staff cafe, they sold ordinary scones made with white flour and wholemeal scones made with what I now considered the only satisfactory flour. The rich texture made it more tasty, so much so that if the cafe ran out of my favoured wholemeal, I would not have a scone at all. No wholemeal, no eat. Bread too. I only ever bought bread that was wholemeal. Then I discovered that Sainsbury's had started selling wholemeal shortbread, so I stocked up on that too. It was heavenly, a bit like grazing on delightful shards of sharp honey. Seemed nicer than over-milled shortbread made from white flour, which tastes like sugary blocks of dust. At this time, food shops seemed to be offering more and more of their products in a wholemeal version. Clearly, I wasn't the only person converting to wholemeal. Wholemeal was taking off. I even found, and I wouldn't have thought this possible, wholemeal rice pudding. Either the O'Donnell programme had been extraordinarily influential, or else Sainsbury's detected wholemeal was going to be the new food normal. The medical profession has long preached the benefits of wholemeal, which in America is known as whole grain. Both terms refer to food made from the whole wheat seed, including the casing. In white flour, the casing is removed during the milling process. The casing, also known as the husk or bran, contains no molecules that are absorbed by the gut and used by your body. But what the bran does do is give your gut something to grip as it tries to massage food through your tummy and prevent constipation. Fibre is as important to the smooth running of your body as the oil in a car engine. It can also reduce risk of cancer and heart disease, which relieves pressure on the NHS. Whole food, whole meal and high fibre may be modern terms, but they are not describing anything modern. The words indicate natural food eaten by man for millions of years before guilty machines in factories started annihilating fibre. Trouble is, people got used to the texture of over-refined food and assumed it was best. Sadly, the return to foods high in natural fibre seems to have run out of steam since the dawn of the current century. Wholemeal shortbread and wholemeal rice pudding are no more. Wholemeal's ascent has flattened as far as I can see. Perhaps it is being further eclipsed by the growing popularity of sourdough bread, which is nothing to do with fibre, concentrating instead on fermentation to ease digestion. Sourdough bread is rarely offered in wholemeal. With no recognised national standard, it is difficult to be sure of true wholemeal. What is described as wholemeal can include a large proportion of white flour. Personally, for reliable labelling of wholemeal, I mostly trust supermarkets who have their nationwide reputation to protect. The word wholemeal is crucial. White or brown, customers are often asked, unaware that brown bread is usually white flour with colouring added. And that was by George Hayter.
Now to the week's announcements. There are a couple of What's On items. First one is about the lunchtime concerts at the Chapel of St Cross. These concerts' principal aim is to provide a performing opportunity for young musicians drawn from local schools and colleges, and including star students from the Royal Academy of Music. This year there will have been 28 concerts in total, and the final concert is on Thursday, the 26th of October, at 12:30, and will feature the London Central Brass Trio from the Royal Academy of Music, who will play a programme to celebrate the end of a successful series. Entry is free, and refreshments will follow. And then looking quite a bit ahead, the opening concert of the 2024 series will be given by the Hampshire County Youth Orchestra on Thursday, April the 18th at 12:30 p.m. It's free entry, and also on the same day, the Hospital of St Cross is planting a tree to commemorate the coronation of King Charles III, and that will be at 2 o'clock on the 18th of April, but I'm sure we'll notify you about this again a bit nearer the time. And looking even further ahead,
there's optimism.
Tickets for Boomtown 2024 have been released.
Whoa.
The festival held at the Mattingley Estate near Winchester will be returning for its 14th edition in August 2024, labelled as Chapter 3, Revolution of Imagination. It will take place between Wednesday, the 7th of August, and the Sunday, the 11th of August. And tickets for the 2024 event can now be bought on the Boomtown website.
Mm. Or you know when to book your holiday.
Or if you want to move away, you know, to avoid the noise, that's something else. Sunrise these days is around 7:30 in the morning. Sunset is around 6 o'clock in the evening. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you yourself have a problem with the recordings you have received from us, please contact us on 01962 861 229. That's 01962 861 229. And the number can also be found on the key fob attached to the memory stick. We now continue with further items of news.
This item is entitled 1 million payout for community work. Civic chiefs have triggered more than 1 million to fund a wide range of community projects. Community Infrastructure Levy, CIL, supports projects to improve facilities and reduce the need for residents to travel further afield, especially in areas where there's been significant development. The funds are collected from developers after they've gained planning permission for schemes. The reaction from councillors was positive as the funding was approved at Winchester City Council's Cabinet on Tuesday, October the 17th. Bishop's Waltham was allocated £217,000 for temporary consulting rooms at Bishop's Waltham Surgery. The Market Town was also awarded £80,000 towards the purchase of St John's Ambulance Hall and energy efficiency measured at Jubilee Hall. Councillor Jonathan Williams, who represents the Bishop's Waltham ward, said Bishop's Waltham has had the second highest amount allocated in the district, almost £300,000. Thank you. It has been fantastic to work on this. The GP surgery serves a wide area. The council was praised for funding projects in the southern parishes, one on the border with Havant Borough Council, gaining £200,000 to extend and redevelop Waterlooville Leisure Centre. Councillor Michael Reid, who represents Denmead, said, "I'm delighted with this, as it has a wide range of projects. This demonstrates putting residents first. We still have a large amount of unallocated funds, so we need to build on this momentum next year." The projects include £410,000 for improvements to public toilets, access across the district, £21,000 for new and improved bus shelters on Cromwell Road and Andover Road, £60,000 to replace gas boilers with air source heat pumps and install solar panels to Meadowside Leisure Centre in Whiteley, and £300,000 for a contraflow cycle scheme on Upper High Street. Councillor Kelsey Lerney said, "I very much welcome this. It allows so many projects to move forward across the district. The refurbishment of public toilets will lead to an improved visitor experience." The project also include Memorial Park Compton, inclusive play equipment, £15,000. Eversley Park Playground, Kingsworthy, play equipment, £12,000. Oliver's Battery Recreation Ground, leisure equipment, £10,000. And Otterbourne Village Hall, improvements, £15,000. Swanmore allotments infrastructure improvements, £12,100. Twyford Village Centre, real-time bus information, £10,000.
Celebrating 55 years of volunteer radio service. Supporters of Winchester's community radio station, Winchester Radio, gathered at a restaurant for coffee and cake to celebrate 55 years of a hospital radio service in the city. Hospital radio started at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital in Winchester in October 1968. The service, then as now, was delivered by a dedicated team of volunteers. Originally, the service in Winchester for inpatients at the RHCH was provided by the then Southampton and Winchester Broadcasting Service, but since September 1984, it has been provided by charity Winchester Radio and its volunteers. Ahead of Winchester Radio's own 40th anniversary next year, the station held a fundraising coffee morning at Rick Stein, Winchester, on Wednesday, October the 11th. The event raised £498, including donations from some supporters who couldn't make it on the day. Chair of Winchester Radio, Anna O'Brien, said, "It was great to get together and celebrate the fact that unpaid volunteers, through their unstinting commitment, time and efforts, have provided a hospital radio service here in Winchester continually for 55 years. We are very grateful to Rick Stein Winchester for providing us with such a beautiful venue to celebrate this special anniversary of volunteer effort, supporting patients, and to the organisations who supported us with raffle prizes too. Rick Stein, the Ivy, the University of Winchester, Chococo, Hilliers, Cook and Waitrose." And as a note of interest for our listeners, we originally, or not originally, but a long time ago, we spent many years sharing premises with Winchester Radio when we were up at the hospital. We used to had a job finding parking then, of course, as I recall in the early days. You know, 'twas ever thus, wasn't it?
Indeed,
yeah, and wonderful people. So we know many of them, and in fact, they helped us enormously when we went digital and went onto these memory sticks and so on from the old tapes. Nigel Dallard from Winchester Radio helped us do that, and it was a great step forward.
First night walk for City Hospice raises £4,000. Hundreds of people walked across Winchester in the dark to raise money for the city's hospice. Winchester Hospice organised its first purple night walk, raising nearly £4,000 from ticket and merchandise sales to help fund the palliative and end-of-life care service. Following the success of the sell-out inaugural event, organisers have decided to make it an annual fundraiser. Walkers dressed in purple clothing, accessories and lights trekked a 6-kilometre loop from All Saints Church in Highcliffe on Saturday, October the 14th, passing landmarks like the Hospital of St Cross, Hockley Viaduct and the River Itchen. Spirits were kept up with a surprise performance from choir Winchester Sings partway through, with upbeat tunes such as Dancing in the Moonlight. Anna from Colden Common said, "We lost a very good friend to cancer. We thought this walk was the least we could do to support the hospice and to walk in her memory. She loved dressing up and we used to always go out and do things, so she's absolutely part of this." Maddie Thompson, consultant nurse and clinical lead for end of life care at Winchester Hospice and trustee for Winchester Hospice fundraising charity, said, "This is one of many fundraising events, but this is the first time we've ever done something as large as this for the whole community. This will enable us to provide a service that is absolutely essential for our population, and we don't just want to provide it, we want to grow it so this service can get bigger and better." Stephen Locke was taking part with his wife, Rachel, who's a sister at the hospice, and their dog. Mr. Locke from Alsford said, "We're very excited to be here and hopefully we're going to raise lots of money for the hospice. We wanted to support Rachel's work and all the great things they do there. For our community, it's an amazing facility, something that we've not had in Winchester before. It's only been open 2 years, but it's going really well, and I know the care they provide is first class. Mrs. Locke said, "It's really important our patients feel safe and cared for, and we also look after all the relatives and their family and their pets. Everyone feels safe and well looked after. I definitely get dressed up for the occasion. I don't often go out in my purple tutu, but I really wanted to support them. It's a really special place and an important part of my life."
And this is entitled Scaffolding Signals Changes. Big changes are on the way for a long empty department store on Winchester's High Street as scaffolding is erected. It's been put up at the back of Debenhams. Further scaffolding is scheduled to go up at the front in approximately a week. This comes after news that the shop, which has been closed and empty since 2021, is to be relet to a trio of restaurant chains. As previously reported, it is believed that the restaurant chains Five Guys, Nando's and Pizza Express, which already has a location on Bridge Street, will move onto the ground floor. However, this is currently unconfirmed. The chains have been contacted by the Chronicle, with only a Five Guys spokesperson responding, saying that they are not able to comment at this time. The scaffolding was originally due to be set up on Monday, October the 2nd. The reason for the delay is not yet known. It will be in place until the end of February. The arrival of the three restaurant chains dashes the hope that the building could have become an indoor market.
Revamp at homeless charity. Work is underway to revamp the washing facilities at a Winchester homeless charity. Teams at the Winchester Beacon on Jury Street are working to convert the shared washing space into 8 individual bathrooms after months of fundraising and planning. Michelle Price, the charity's chief executive, said, "Our residents are often at a vulnerable time in their life. Our focus is on helping each resident to rebuild their life so that they can escape homelessness for good. Having somewhere to stay where they feel safe and comfortable is vital in this journey. We are so pleased that we are one step closer to being able to provide our residents with a place where they can wash privately and in comfort. Thank you to the people who have made this possible." The work has been supported by a number of organisations, including Crash Charity, which has provided financial support and pro bono professional expertise. This has included pro bono project management from local company ACOM. The project has also been funded by the DLUHC Transformation Fund, Housing and Communities, the Fine and Country Foundation, Hampshire County Council, and the National Lottery Fund.
Cathedral organ undergoes final step of restoration project. The final step of the organ restoration process at Winchester Cathedral has begun as voicing starts on the 5,000 pipes. It is all done by ear, requiring very quiet conditions. A person known as the voicer assesses each pipe and tests each one repeatedly to ensure that the speech and volume levels are correct. Compared to regularly tuning the pipes, which alters the pitch, voicing is about guiding the musical output of each pipe. Adjustments are made to each one to ensure that each note is not louder or softer than its neighbours. Each stop has a pipe for every note on the organ keyboard, and individual notes are therefore sounded repetitively at high and low frequencies. The voicing is done by Harrison and Harrison, the organ builders overseeing the restoration. Claudia Grinnell, one of two sub-organists at the cathedral, says that the voicing process is an exciting time because it only happens once in a generation, The last was in 1988. She said, "It's interesting to hear, and it's the only time you will hear it, as voicing is done every 40 years, and the process will take 5 weeks over 12-hour days, so it's very intensive."
Law in order at celebration. Judges, magistrates and civic chiefs were dressed in their finery at the annual Law Sunday procession. Winchester Cathedral hosted the traditional service on Sunday, October the 8th. The event is a celebration of those who work in law and order, with judges, magistrates, barristers, coroners, prison staff, members of the armed forces, police and fire officers all involved. A civic procession included the Mayor of Winchester, Angela Clear, Leader of Hampshire County Council, Robert Humby, City Councillors and former Mayors. The High Sheriff of Hampshire, Amelia Rivers, chose charities as Street Reach, which helps young people with outreach sessions. Mrs. Riviere requested that volunteers and the theme of redemption be featured strongly in the service.
Street pastors praise security woman. Winchester street pastors have commended a security woman who drove a semi-responsive man to hospital when no ambulances were available. Winchester security woman and nurse, Sarah Jane Howard, came to the rescue over the summer when Winchester street pastors found a man in need of urgent medical attention. At around 2 a.m, a team of street pastors found a man on the steps of the Ark in Jury Street. He said he didn't need any help, so the team decided to call back and ask CCTV to monitor him. A few minutes later, the team mentioned the man to Sarah Jane, who was working on the door of the old jailhouse that night. By the time the street pastors and Sarah Jane had returned, the man had crossed the road and slumped onto the pavement. The team called an ambulance and, using his phone, contacted his parents and wife, who was unable to collect him as she was at home with their children. The group then walked with the casualty for more than an hour while Sarah Jane went back to run her door. As no ambulance was available, she returned once the venue had closed at 3:15 a.m. with her car and drove the man to hospital. The man phoned Mark Hibbert Hingston, coordinator of Winchester Street Pastors, the following day to say he was recovering well and to thank the team for their support. He was incredibly grateful. Mark Hibbert Hingston presented Sarah Jane with a certificate for her efforts this month while she was back working for Alpha Security. Mike Hobby, who was team leader on the night, said, "As street pastors, our mission is to care, listen and help where we can."
Crown actor slams unforgivable sewage record. An actor best known for his role in The Crown has criticised the government for its record on water quality, which he described as unforgivable. James Murray, who lives near Alresford, has come out in support of the Winchester Liberal Democrats, who are campaigning to clean up rivers. Mr. Murray said, "This government has allowed our unique environment to fall to such a degraded state. Their record is absolutely unforgivable. It's clear they don't care." In a recent speech at Lib Dem conference, Lib Dem Winchester MP candidate Danny Chambers said, "The Lib Dems will introduce a sewage tax on water companies' profits to fund the clean-up of waterways. We will abolish Ofwat and replace it with a new regulator with significantly strengthened powers to hold the companies accountable for discharging raw sewage. We will set stringent targets and deadlines for water companies."
Primary school celebrates good Ofsted result. A primary school and its new head teacher are celebrating its latest Ofsted result. Hairstock Primary School in Bramshaw Close has retained its good status following its last inspection. Head teacher Amy Deer, who took over the school in April, was delighted with her first result, keeping up with the high standards of previous head of 16 years, Jackie Sankey. Mrs. Deer said, "The children, staff and governors of Hairstock Primary School are absolutely delighted by our good Ofsted report. We feel the inspection understood the essence of our school, which at its root is inclusivity and kindness, but also recognised the great educational experience children get at our school." Inspectors who visited before the summer holidays praised the pupils' effort, creativity, and consideration of one another. The report published last month reads, "Pupils thrive as they learn to build friendships and become confident individuals at this school."
Nominations open for light duties, and you will see that that's a clever headline. Because the search is on for the person to switch on the Christmas lights in Winchester City Centre. Winchester Bid is inviting nominations for someone to press the giant red button to light up the Guildhall and High Street. The Christmas lights will be switched on at 6:30 p.m. on Thursday, November the 16th. This year's event will be hosted by Heart Radio, and the night will be full of festive fun with Santa's sleigh and live performances from Hairstock Primary School Choir, the Pilgrims School Chamber Choir, Winchester A Cappella, Integrate Dance, Theatre Royal Winchester, Spitfire Sisters, Rock Choir and Diva Academy to help kick-start the festive season celebrations. The giant inflatable snow globe will be installed in the square from 12 p.m. It's part of a fundraising initiative for Spare Change for Lasting Change, and 100% of donations will go directly to the Winchester Beacon and Trinity Winchester. Santa will be parking his sleigh next to the snow globe this year to enable more selfie opportunities with some snow. Nominations for a person to switch on the lights must be made by Tuesday, October the 31st.
Help to power up playground. A clean energy company which developed a solar farm at Three Maids Hill has donated £12,000 to a playground in Littleton. Enviromina made the donation to Littleton and Hairstock Parish Council to contribute towards the installation of the Labyrinth play feature in the centre of the playground. Parish Councillor Liz Wynne said, "This new equipment is part of the Parish Council's plan to continually improve the quality and safety of our playgrounds. We had removed a couple of structures which were popular but starting to deteriorate. With the money we've received, we've been able to supplement the budget to replace them and now have a multi-challenge climbing structure, which is also an attractive addition to the playground. We're really pleased that it is already being well used." The team at Enviromina heard about the plan to renew the play equipment after working with the council during the construction of the Three Maids Solar Farm, which is close to the A34 at Worthy Down. Mark Harding, Development Director, said, "Our sites promote the use of cleaner, greener energy. The 110-acre, 25.4 megawatt Three Maids Hill site is capable of providing enough electricity to power 9,500 homes and offset 6,800 tonnes of CO2 emissions per year. The project will have a major impact and provide communities with cheaper energy for many years to come, especially at a time when gas and electricity prices have reached record highs." Lee Adams, Sales Director, said, "Three Maids was an important project as it was our first major project in the UK. The local community and parish council were a great support to us during the build, and we wanted to thank them by giving something back. That's when the parish council recommended funding for this piece of much-loved play equipment, and we are thrilled to see the labyrinth in situ and being enjoyed by local families. Enviromena 3 Maidshill development is the first in its UK portfolio to go live and represents some of the 700 megawatts of renewable energy assets it manages, operates and maintains.
Community unites at Eco Fair. Residents of Harestock and Littleton met councillors and volunteers at an Eco Fair on Saturday, October the 7th. A solar-powered train set captured the attention of local people who took the chance to visit stalls about saving home energy, reducing household waste, and improving local biodiversity. Stall holders chatted to people about the local neighbourhood meadow initiative, and they took away packets of wildflower and grass seeds for their own garden projects. Advice about improving the energy efficiency of homes will help to reduce bills this winter, and residents could sign up for the loan of the parish thermal imaging camera to track down spots in their homes where heat escapes. Attendees expressed interest in setting up a local branch of the Winchester Repair Cafe, and the parish council said it's keen to hear from repairers and others who might become part of this.
Essential work to start on city centre wall. Postponed essential works to an unstable wall in Winchester city centre will begin this month, disrupting traffic on the busy road. Planned repairs to north walls bordering Marston Gate have started due to safety concerns over the stability of the wall. Traffic and pedestrians will be affected due to temporary lane and footpath closures enforced at certain stages until the essential repairs are completed in 4 months. The footpath has been closed since work started on Monday, October the 16th, whilst contractors remove ivy and vegetation from both sides of the wall. 3 weeks later, one lane will be shut whilst scaffolding is erected for the repairs to start. The lane will be blocked between Monday, November the 6th and Tuesday, November the 14th, opening for the weekend traffic. There will then be a footpath closure in place for the duration of the works until the lane is closed again to accommodate the removal of the scaffolding. This will be from Monday, February the 26th to Tuesday, March the 5th. All works are hoped to be completed by Friday, March the 8th. Access for pedestrians will be closed on the wall side of the road with directional signage directing pedestrians around the working site. The works were originally scheduled for over the summer but were delayed until further notice due to additional tests being needed following discussions between the contractors and Historic England. North Walls marks the northern line of the city's defences, originally built in Roman times and upgraded in the Middle Ages.
MP in fraud hotline call. MP Flick Drummond is campaigning to spread the message about how easy it is for people to phone their bank or building society if they are concerned about fraud. The West Meon MP held a fraud and scams forum, during which she was told about phone number 159, a safe and secure way to get hold of all major banks and building societies. Mrs. Drummond admitted it was the first time she'd heard of the number, and now she wants awareness of it raised in places like village halls, care homes, men's sheds and other voluntary groups and charities across Hampshire. She said, "Online fraud and scams are costing the country billions each year. Being able to securely call a bank if concerned about a phone call or text message will help stop people from becoming victims. I understand that if someone is on a phone asking for personal details or saying your money is going to be stolen, people can sometimes quite rightly panic or be fearful they won't be talking to their bank. But using 159 eliminates that fear, and it will put anyone through to a bank and not the fraudsters. It's so easy to remember, and it means you will be getting the right advice without having to find or remember a bank's direct number. Please spread the word about 159.
Leader for Vibrant Arts and Education Faculty. The University of Winchester has appointed a new Dean of the Faculty of Education and the Arts. Dr. Kathy Gower, currently Dean of the School of Education at the University of Brighton, will take up the post on January the 1st next year. Prior to joining Brighton in 2021, she spent 25 years at Brunel University, London, where she was an undergraduate and a postgraduate program leader for physical education, PE, teaching courses before taking on wider leadership roles, including director of initial teaching education, eventually becoming head of the Department of Education. She said, "I'm absolutely delighted to be joining Winchester to lead such a vibrant faculty, which combines two of my own professional and personal passions in life, education and the arts. These two academic disciplines are integral to so many aspects of our individual and collective development as human beings and to the socio-cultural and economic enrichment of society. They can truly offer transformational educational experiences for students, which I know is at the heart of the exciting new university strategic plan. I recognize the importance of the faculty in terms of engagement with our local, regional, national, and international community, and I look forward to working with our key partners and stakeholders going forward. It is also such a beautiful environment to work and learn in, with such a strong sense of community. It will be a pleasure and a privilege to be the Dean." Before moving into higher education, Kathy taught PE and English in two secondary schools in West London, and in the early 1990s, as an early career teacher, she attended summer schools at King Alfred's College, the forerunners of the University of Winchester. Professor Sarah Greer, Vice-Chancellor of the University of Winchester, said Kathy brings with her a wealth of outstanding experience in educational leadership, in higher education, and I am delighted to welcome her to the university. Winchester has an outstanding reputation for teaching and research in education and the arts, and I have no doubt that both disciplines will grow and flourish under her leadership.
Club withdraws irrigation plans. A Hampshire golf club has withdrawn its plans for a sustainable irrigation system and water storage pond following questions from planners. Hockley Golf Club has confirmed it will be resubmitting an application to the South Downs National Park in due course that meets planning officers' requirements. Planning consultant Stuart Austin said they're disappointed to take this step as the team believes the issues are simple to fix. The golf club near Twyford hopes to install an irrigation system with a water storage pond that could hold up to 7,000 cubic metres and remove the need to use mains water to maintain the course. The proposed development, originally submitted in May, is in response to the Environment Agency identifying the area as being under, quote, serious water stress, unquote. Although nearly 40 people submitted supporting comments, it received objections over traffic along the already congested B3335 and potential harm to the park's natural beauty. Chris Kilgannon, club manager, said, "We have currently withdrawn the application as the planning officer for the South Downs has asked some questions. We are currently working through these questions and shall be resubmitting in due course. We feel confident we can answer all the questions. If approved, the golf club would also develop its driving range with new target greens, an upgraded range building, and a short game area. A South Downs National Park spokesman said, "During the statutory consultation process, National Park Authority officers raised concerns due to changes to the landscape character of open downland and insufficient information regarding ecology, trees, flood risk, highways, and archaeology. The proposals were considered to be contrary to policies in the South Downs local plan, which puts landscape at the heart of the planning process."
Third plea of guilty after camera snared fly tippers. A third man has pleaded guilty to dumping household waste on Lee Drove near Romsey. Gordon Freeman, 38, of Fairdown Close, St Giles Hill, Winchester, admitted the offence at Southampton Magistrates Court on Friday, October the 6th. He will be sentenced on Friday, December the 15th. As previously reported, a covert trail camera caught Freeman, along with David Hill, 69, and Stuart Haynes, 43, removing rubbish, which included a fridge, from the back of a vehicle and throwing it into a hedge on June the 19th, 2022. The vehicle was registered to Hill's business, DH Autos. Hill of Cosworth Drive, Dibden, and Haynes of Pyle Gardens, Kings Barton, Winchester, attended an interview under caution where they admitted to dumping the waste. The pair appeared at Southampton Magistrates Court on Friday, October the 6th, where they were each given a 12-month community order, a fine of £120, and ordered to pay a victim surcharge of £114 and costs of £303. Test Valley Borough Council portfolio holder for the Environmental Services, Councillor David Drew, said, "Illegally dumping waste in Test Valley will never be acceptable, and I'm glad to see another result like this. Our teams work extremely hard to keep the borough clean, and incidents like this cost money and use up valuable resources. We have a brilliant record of catching people fly tipping, and that will continue to be the case."
And finally, a couple of items about Marwell Zoo. Marwell Zoo has been shortlisted for the Great British Wildlife Restoration Competition, a new one-off award scheme recognising work to restore native species. Mm-hmm. It has been hailed for its reintroduction of the UK's rare sand lizards to southern England. The project began 30 years ago and has released more than 2,000 lizards to 28 heathland and coastal dune sites.
Wow.
Small lizards are impressive. Have impressive camouflage and are difficult to find after they have been released. So, Marwell developed a study which fitted tiny radio tracking backpacks to the reintroduced lizards at Ealemore Marsh in North Hampshire to evaluate post-released monitoring techniques. Carla Broom, wildlife ecologist at Marwell, said, "These fascinating creatures have experienced alarming declines in the UK due to the loss of their preferred habitats and heathlands." And also, Marwell Wildlife has been honoured by the World Association of Zoos and Aquariums at its annual conference in San Diego.
Oh, wow.
They were awarded the Conservation Award, recognising the charity's dedication to conservation for more than five decades. In particular, the award recognises the zoo's work to re-establish scimitar horn oryx back into the wilds in Tunisia. Mm. After an 80-year absence followed by extinction across its global range, Marwell worked with partners to re-establish these antelope across four principal areas. Following the success, the zoo worked to reintroduce the North African ostrich, with a permanent in-country team established to monitor the animals and their habits. Professor Philip Riordan, Director of Conservation at Marwell, said, "Our journey to restore scimitar-horned oryx and its habitats in Tunisia is a testament to the power of perseverance and persistence and belief in the possible. We believe that humanity can correct its past mistakes, and modern zoos and aquaria are perfectly placed to lead these conservation efforts."
Mm. Marvellous.
Mm. Wow.
Well, on that very positive note,
indeed,
that concludes our extracts for the week. Our thanks to our editors for selecting the extracts this week, to the copying, dispatch and memory stick preparation teams, and to our readers today, who were Tony Bergstrom.
Goodbye.
John Richards.
Goodbye.
And Jane Rutter.
Goodbye.
And from me, John Parker, goodbye too. Please return the memory stick as soon as you're able, not forgetting to put your address label inside the envelope. And a reminder that you can also hear Winchester Talking Newspaper on AWAS Community Radio 99.8 FM and digital on Saturdays at 4 p.m.